You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Tony. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, excited to be on and talk on your podcast, talk to your listeners about some things that have to do with pharmacy business.
Great. Tony, most people, unless they have their head in the sand, are going to know who Tony Guerra is. But for those, for the one or two that don't, give us a little bit of a background, catch us up to speed of who you are.
I'm a pharmacist, been doing this for 22 years. And I spent 8 years in retail and then ended up meeting my wife. We sort of did residency. I didn't finish, but ended up teaching chemistry in a community college. And I've been doing that for the last 11 years, but I've kept very active on social. I have a degree now in human computer interaction, which is a fancy way of saying computers and cognitive psychology and some design principles and things like that. But I got into podcasting maybe 3 or 4 years ago, had a YouTube channel that caught some, momentum, and I've just kind of been talking and kind of keeping people informed on some things that maybe they don't hear about, and just trying to help people through books and videos. And I got 3 8-year-old girls, so sometimes it's my time away, and I know you got a bunch of kids, so yeah. But that's me, just trying to be a good dad, trying to be a good pharmacist, and trying to help some people.
Well, the reason I have you on, Tony, is I've come across you years ago with all of your stuff, and you're really hitting the whole gamut. One question I have now: when you say you're at the college, tell me again. Mm-hmm. That's community college.
Yeah, so in Ankeny, Iowa, which is one of the northern suburbs of Des Moines. I've been here for 11 years. I actually started out helping out with a pharmacy technician program as the chair, and then I would teach some bio classes, and then organic chemistry is actually how I first got here. And now I teach chemistry and pharmacology full time. The chemistry usually to people that are going to enter health professions, whether medical assisting or nursing. We have 19 different health programs here in the building. And then I also teach pharmacology online, which a lot of people need if maybe they had a bad semester and they need to take it online to make it up. So those are the kind of two things I do for my 9 to 5, if you want to call it.
Okay, because I was going to ask that, because when I looked at your LinkedIn, mm-hmm. it talks about the community college, and I thought, well, what pharmacology does he teach outside of, you know, a pharmacy school? Now, are you ever teaching that to people that are already in pharmacy, or is that always going to be to like technicians or people or nurses needing to get somewhere?
Yeah, I don't teach. I mean, I take APPE students, but I don't do anything with the colleges in terms of teaching. So mine is freshman, sophomore level pharmacology for allied health professions. So anything that's allied with the physician or, you know, with the pharmacist. But I don't teach graduate level courses. We're only allowed to teach freshman, sophomore here. So that's, I gotcha. That's the extent of what I do. Yeah.
I gotcha. What I had thought about teaching in my past, and usually, like, if I'm at the pharmacy and I get maybe not an intern, but, you know, a new employee, and I got to teach something more than about 2 or 3 times in a row, I get sick of hearing myself talk. I know my family can hear me talk, but I get sick of that myself. How do you prevent that, you know, from, I mean, because obviously someone's going to associate a pharmacist, you do the same thing over and over. And we know that's not true, you know, but you do the same exact thing. But how do you do that in teaching? How do you manage that to say, well, no, here's why I don't get sick of Tony.
Well, I do teach the same class over and over, which is funny that you asked that. So I'll talk about, you know, having repetitive things in your life and making it not so repetitive. So pharmacology does change a little bit, but chemistry in general doesn't. Even if they did add to the periodic table, it wouldn't change the elements of the periodic table that I'm teaching. So what I do is to kind of keep the other side of my brain going, is that's where all the books come in and kind of solving things. So the memorizing pharmacology book came from being in pharmacology class and seeing that I was teaching over their heads, and they're just like, I just don't, if you could just keep the names in my head, because it was like a different language to them. So yeah. I kind of worked to solve the top 200 problem. So how do you remember the top 200 so that you can understand what I'm saying with the rest of the material? And every single book I've written is trying to solve a single problem. The jobs issue, maybe with the pharmacy schools, and not to go too deep down that rabbit hole, but that I just met a lot of people that have jobs that aren't on the menu, I guess, if you want to put it that way. And right. and I found a lot of them at the APHA meeting. So I was like, that's really cool. Let's talk about those. And so that's, if anybody wants to get out there in writing and teaching or kind of break up the repetition, just find something that's driving people crazy and solve the problem and write a book about it.
Yeah. Solve that hole. Did you, have you thought of a song yet? Do you sing like that little guy that does all the states and all the presidents and things like that?
I did a couple of things actually. It's funny you ask. I have a song in the Memorizing Pharmacology book, which I have the narrator, James Gillies, who's actually Scottish, but he was on the BBC for a while, and he does a good job singing it. And there's a rap that the guy from the Harry Potter actor, Daniel Radcliffe, does, and it's the ABC or alphabet something or other. By Blackalicious, and it's a really hard rap to do, and it's so impressive watching Harry Potter, now Daniel Radcliffe, you know, doing this rap. So I was like, I wonder how fast I could do, you know, 200 drugs, and right. it was about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So I think it went viral. It's got 300 views, but I did give it a shot.
we'll do that next time we talk.
Okay.
One goal I've always had was to, because my history is kind of an independent pharmacy, and we serve a little population and in our little city and so on. It was always fascinating to me, and still is fascinating, to break out to the world via the internet and actually, you know, sell a product to the internet versus our 2 mile radius. What was it like? And I know that from a benevolent standpoint, you know, you made the books and it helps the people and so on. Take me through the path, if you would, of how you actually got your first sale on the internet, and what was that like, and is that a pain in the rear, or is that cool, or tell me about that.
Yeah, it's a good quick story, because it's a good lesson. So I actually wrote the book and published it on lulu.com as a print book. And I would literally take these cases of books to the bookstore, because I put it in my classes, and you know, it's like, well, how much money do you make off the students? And I think I make $1.12. So
you're not the $90 textbook yet. Huh?
Yeah. So there's whatever the class is, it's like, you know, if it's 4 credits, it's $600 at a community college. You know, I'm making $1.12 from that. So that was one thing, is, you know, getting and talking to the bookstore person, kind of understanding that process. But then Lulu also sells to the world, and I was kind of disappointed that the world didn't buy anything. And I was like, why aren't they buying any books, you know?
Right.
And so I put it on this new website called Amazon.com. I hadn't.
Oh, that little one?
Yeah. And I didn't know that how big a deal it was. So I was like, all right, well, here's the ebook version. And I actually had it converted to Mobi, which is a type of software, but I won't get into that. I just do Word files now. And you just upload the Word file, and then. So then I had the ebook up there, and I was like, man, it is just going to crush it. And nope, nothing. Then I did something, which I'm not sure why I did it. I guess just one day I was like, God, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I wonder if people would listen to it. Yep.
We had just a technical glitch possibly there. And so I'll go. If not, we'll just leave a little break for the audience. But start back up again, if you would, about you went to the ebook on Amazon, and you
were gonna
see how that did.
Sure. So I went to upload it on Amazon, and then I thought, I'll definitely get sales, because it's $9.99 on Amazon as an ebook and $20 as a book in in the classroom, and really maybe a few students liked it and liked the discount. But again, it wasn't really the huge, you know, bestseller I was hoping for, or, you know, that there's always the dream that, that somebody blogs about it and you're like, million copies, retired, done, you know, you're so excited. And that didn't happen. So I guess I just kind of looked at my own pattern, which was, well, I don't actually read. My wife reads eBooks almost exclusively, and I don't read print books anymore, really. I mean, I talk about them as we're going in class. So I was like, all right, let's make an audiobook. And that was an expensive bet. It's $400 per finished hour, or $300 per finished hour, depending on the narrator you get. So a finished hour means they've recorded the hour and they'll charge you for what they recorded. They don't charge you for the amount of hours it took them to make that recording. So it's just like,
that's your own person, or that's someone on Amazon?
That's someone on the Audible. Well, it's ACX, Audible Creation Exchange, and you can look them up, and people actually come to you. You put it up there and say, I'm willing to pay between $200 and $400 for the narrator. They come to you with a sample, and you're just, it's just like you're in Hollywood and you're sitting there taking auditions, and they're auditioning for your book. And obviously the more you pay, the more auditions you'll get. And $200 to $400 is a good price point. And so I took that leap, and I didn't really think about it, and just kind of said, all right, well, it's a pain to study it. Maybe they'll listen on the way in. And then it just took off. And I was really, really not expecting it, but I think, gosh, last year in all the books altogether, and I only make about 12,000 a year from the ebook, 6,000 from the print book, but about 50,000 from the audiobooks now, which was just mind blowing to me that, you know, so many people would buy them. But that was just a big, big thing, and something Amazon did recently that kind of cut into those profits, or will cut into those profits, is you don't get bonuses anymore for people joining Amazon in the way that they did before, or Audible they did before. But I'll still make 30 or 40 grand a year from the ebook, from the audiobooks alone. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's just kind of a crazy, crazy niche that I got into by accident completely.
Now, are the people on, because I've got a few books on Amazon, and I just did those. I never even went to print. I just went right to ebook. Mm-hmm. And those, they're very few and far between when one is purchased, but when one is, you get a little, you know,
dopamine
notification. Yeah, a little dopamine. That's right. You get to skip the other drugs that day and get your dopamine from endogenously, I guess that's the word. Is that the same way in terms of with Amazon, the ebooks, you know, basically people are downloading them. Is that the same way then with the audio, that they're downloading them onto their like Amazon account?
Yeah. So you get an Audible app versus the Amazon Kindle app. So it's just a different app, but you can do that. You can go global and you'll get a lesser percentage, or you can go with just Amazon, with just Audible, and you'll get a greater percentage per sale. And all of mine are exclusively with Audible, and there's pluses and minuses to that. So, but
because Audible, Amazon owns Audible now.
Yeah, they own them, but they're definitely separate in terms of the way that, that things work that way. So in terms of, like, I get payments from Amazon for eBooks, and then I think Audible for audiobooks. So they're different deposits into the bank account.
Yeah. Wow. Would you write differently knowing now that your Audible books took off? Are there nuances that you would do differently for the written book versus the Audible book?
Yeah. So what you want to do when you're making a book is you want to have three different books in mind, because each one is going to have a different audience. So for the print book, I know that it's going to be in the classroom, so it needs to be set up a certain way. For the ebook, and this is what I do with my ebooks now, but for example, if you put a multiple choice question in there, because you have unlimited pages, it doesn't cost you an extra paper page. You put the question on the first page, and then the question and the full answer on the next page, then the question on the full page, question, full answer on the next page. So there's interactivity that you can do with the ebook that you can't do with the print book, but also it's just, sometimes you're also thinking, all right, well, if this person has a smaller screen, you know, do I really want to put this much text on there? If they're going to use an image like a PowerPoint, should I make it so it's horizontal or vertical? And so each one is kind of, you kind of get good at like, okay, well, for this group, I'm going to do this. And then for audio, for example, I'm working with Mike Lenz right now, who's out of upstate New York. And, you know, we're like, okay, well, what do we do with these pictures? And so now we're describing the pictures and then setting up, okay, well, let's say somebody just wants to breeze through the book. Okay, well, let's do it this way. And then, all right, what if they want to listen to the whole thing? Then do it this way. So each type, if you're making three types of a book, you're actually making three books, in my opinion.
That's interesting. All right, now I'm listening to you, and oh, you got this deep baritone, just great voice.
That's not me. it's people I hire.
You had to toy. Did you toy with the idea of reading him yourself or not?
Yeah, I've done it, and I found that I don't enjoy it. And I've got the 3 8-year-old girls, and I just find that, you know, after a session of recording it, I'm like, this is just making me angry. It just takes so much work and so much time. And and here Mike Lenz on the other side, like, oh, I love doing audiobooks. I love doing narration. I'm like, all right, man, you just do your thing and I'll do my thing.
Stick with the things that you like on it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. As is good in business in general. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Well, that's fascinating because those numbers that you're talking, that's really fascinating because I hear, you know, I hear you and a lot of our colleagues on the pharmacy internet talking about the, you know, the side hustle and that. And it's like, yeah, well, that's nice, but you know, I don't want to sell something for, you know, make $6 on eBay or something. But those are some obviously huge numbers you're talking about.
Yeah, well, the thing is that I do sell a lot of inexpensive things versus other people who sell expensive things. Trust me, I'd rather sell 5 things for, you know, $1,000 a month than, you know, have to put out, like, I think I sell about 600. No, because I've got 2 platforms. So I would say I sell about 700-800 audiobooks a month, making about $4 a book. So,
all right, Tony, but I'm feeling sorry for you though, because I know you're not lugging around. audiobook. You're making it sound like you're selling, you know, baseball mitts or something that you have to lug up the stairs.
Yeah, and that's the thing is. So this is something you want to consider as you're kind of deciding on your side hustle. And honestly, I think your side hustle decides you. But what really happens is you want to see, is this scalable? Is this something that I have to do? Because once I'm done with the book, I'm done. Just like once you're done with your shift and you're not the manager, you're done. You go home. And so there are many people that like to do services. Coaching, career coaching is a big new one that I see a lot of people doing. And I have no interest in doing that because I'd have to do it again and then do it again. And so I'll make a book that I'll make like $2 on about careers. Yeah. But I won't coach. So I don't do services. I only do products.
You know, I found that I found I'm the same way in terms of like when I talked about how my disdain for hearing myself talk too much. I know no one's going to believe that. But when I think of that and I think of like that's what I enjoy reading because I can come up with a thought. I can write it out once and I'm like, yeah, that was a pretty fun thought or funny or sad or whatever. But I don't want to be a comedian and have to like say the same joke or same thought hundreds of times. You know, I like that. Do it and move on. And I know what you're talking about. You may be talking more about passive income versus active, but also you can do it once in your head and then kind of like move on and not have to do it every day. Is that
And if you look at the way that my books have come out, I've got kind of the 4 categories: pharmacotherapy, pharmacology, then, you know, kind of stuff that's going to help you with your career, and there's one other one. But I just kind of, it's like, well, what's interesting right now? Or what's a problem right now? So next thing I've got a question and answer pharmacology book I'll be done with this week. And then Mike's recording right now. And then in the fall, I'll probably make a chemistry book. And I don't know, it's just kind of like what's going on. But with what's going on with careers, I found that books about careers don't actually sell that terribly well, because although there are many pharmacists, there aren't that many that are moving in any given time. When I say not that many, I would mean like 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, where when you have 3 million nurses that are thinking about pharmacology, it's a very different sized audience. So,
oh, you're talking about if you had to, when you're talking about a career, are you talking about like selling a book to a pharmacist about something in their career versus someone who has to learn at that time?
Right. So I wrote a unicorn jobs book, basically like I have a unicorn job. I work at a community college and then other people have them. And I just kind of made a book about that. But the audience for that is tiny, like a couple, when you're talking tiny, I'm talking 10,000, 20,000 people that might be interested in it. So I knew from the get-go that that was the situation. And so my expectations for, you know, the big hit aren't there, but I thought it was valuable. So it was a passion project more than it was a, man, I'm going to retire on this one. So it really is. Sometimes I make stuff that I know will sell, and sometimes I make stuff that I'm just like, I just kind of want to write this, just kind of want to get it out of my head and get it done. And
yeah. And
so, for example, you might do something for, you know, K-Pharmacy is, okay, I'm going to make this book about the pharmacy and the things that we offer and how pharmacists can help. And this would go to my client base. And then you might have a hobby, which, you know, that just has to do with Lake Michigan or something like that right next door. And that would be a totally different thing. So it's really just kind of deciding, okay, am I going to make something that I'm worried about the revenue or not?
Yeah, right. Because sometimes you just have to get it out of your head. Sometimes it's small as, you know, people writing a memoir for their, you know, kids or grandkids or something like
that.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Now so if I have this right, you're saying that the for someone to read a book about changing jobs or how to do this or that, that's a small percentage versus someone like a nurse who they need to learn about pharmacy for a moment, but you're not asking them to think about a career change to read your book, which those numbers are fewer and farther between.
Right. So I'm just saying when people just say, you know, the first thing in marketing or business is to know your audience. Well, what you really want to know is how big is that potential audience? And so you were like, well, you know, sometimes people click on your book and buy it. And if, as I look at them, it would be, okay, well, this is probably to a narrow audience, but if you have audio, the other thing is that next to your ebook, you get a little button on Amazon that they can listen to it. So it becomes a little bit different in that my advertisement talks and yours may not until you get an ebook on there or an audiobook.
Yeah. Do you think part of the, I know like the, you know, the social guru Gary Vaynerchuk is talking about the rise of now the podcasts and things like that. Do you think the audio is on that same rise? And a follow-up question to that is, do you think the audio is maybe more specific for pharmacy students who are in the car driving back to school? Or do you think it's just like the whole audio is truly taking off in the world?
Okay, well, that's a couple of questions. I can answer them, actually. The big thing with the podcast actually had to do with the rental car companies. So there was the Sirius XM and those things that, you know, you could pay for, and then, you know, you get a membership and so forth. But they just put the podcast app in the cars, and that was free. So all of a sudden, every rental car across the country now does podcasts or can get podcasts. And so that's
They put the podcast versus Sirius,
right? So now it's like, oh, well, your podcast app is there. You can listen to whatever millions of podcasts you want, all for free. And thank you very much. Now we don't have to pay for the Sirius subscription or something like that. Yeah. So that was one reason I think it went on the rise. The other is anything that's going to allow you to do something else while you're working. So if you've got kids like I do, you know, you are at soccer games and basketball and practices where you're just supposed to be there, but you don't have to be there, you know? And so if you're listening and you're paying attention.
You can drive to go to the kids' games, you know, wait for the hours between the things they have to do, and your ears can be involved, but your eyes can be doing something else. And that's kind of some of the rise of the verbal podcasts and so on.
Yeah, and I think what we're really saying is, how do you get in touch with your patients? How do you get in touch with, you know, the students, if they are, you know, pharmacy students and things like that? And you're really listening to where they are. And if they come in and you say, here's our textbook, and or here's your ebook and so forth, you're really not listening to what they're doing. Because I think the number now is up to 75 or 80% of students would prefer that they can do almost their whole class on mobile. So it's just moved so much towards mobile that, you know, trying to engage with them with archaic techniques or technology, it's just not gonna work. So I think what you're doing is great in terms of your podcast, because now you're, this is how I talk to other adults. this is where I find time to talk to other adults and make friends and things like that. And your friends might not be in Grand Rapids. Your new friends might be across the country. Like, you know, TLDR Pharmacy is in Texas. Blair is in Arkansas.
Right.
You know, so the people that care most about exactly what you care about, that tiny niche, are across the country. And this is just so much easier to do it in audio than it is another way.
Yeah, the world has definitely gotten smaller. You know, it's interesting when you talk about technology, because I've been thinking I've had a few glitches, and I apologize to you, Tony. Hopefully for our listeners, I can pull some of these dead signals out that are on the phone. But I'm actually, on purpose, I set this podcast system up with an app on the phone, because I don't even want to be at necessarily a computer or a microphone. And this right now, I'm at a cottage doing this. And so it's just amazing, the things down to the actual app. And when you mentioned about the students, whenever I think of online classes, my mind always goes to me sitting at pharmacy school, you know, 25 years ago at my computer, which wasn't hardly even a computer back then. But like you say, what is it?
In a computer lab, no less. There was no, it wasn't on your lap. It was, the computer lab had to be open. There had to be a computer open for you.
Yeah.
And then you could do whatever you needed to do on a computer. But it wasn't, all right, well, I'll just get my MacBook Air out, or I'll just try to get this done. So I'm trying to respond in my classroom by creating content on, you know, now I'm using Teachable as the platform that I'll use, and everything's got mobile, like quizzes and stuff. So
yeah, that never even really dawned on me about the mobile aspect of online. I guess I just wasn't, maybe I should stop smacking my kids around when they're on the phone and realize that they might be taking a class or something on it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. Well, yeah. Yeah, we're going to doubt that one.
Yeah.
What else? You know, I guess I won't make apologies. This being the business of pharmacy, let's talk business. If I have a product like you do with the oral audio seeming to really take off, now that doesn't necessarily mean you love doing it, because I'm sure you like teaching and that kind of stuff. But is this a direction business-wise that you think you want to go, or what's different, or what's next that you would do along these lines?
Well, I think it's actually, I'll probably be doing the same thing for a little while, but I think we maybe want to speak to the pharmacy students who are there in their classroom, thinking that they're going to go to, you know, whatever retail and go and work in this certain setting. But just as radiologists just found out that, you know, the like Watson type artificial intelligence can do what they do pretty well.
Yeah.
I think that we're actually going to move to where they're going to go, and it's going to be video. It's like, all right, well, I'm going to go do a video chat with a patient or things like that. Or, okay, well, the medicine was just delivered to you, and telepharmacy is very much going, well, it is a thing right now, but because I'm in where I am and what I teach, I don't see a ton of it. But I think that's the thing, is to kind of, the best thing that I think a student could do or a business owner could do is, and I think you probably figured this out a long time ago, is get the hourly thing out of your head.
Yeah.
They're like, well, how much does a pharmacist make an hour? And I was like, well, they might make this or they might make that. But as a business owner, you never think, well, the only reason you think about how much a pharmacist make an hour is because you're hiring them.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, right.
But you're not sitting there going, how much am I making an hour? You're going, all right, well, this month I need to clear 10 grand or this month I need to clear 20. And, you know, even with my personal budgets, I'm like, oof, I went down 4 grand last month. Oh, I'm up 3 grand this month, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
So I'm completely divorced from any kind of hourly thing. It just all goes in the pot. So I think if we want to give some advice to the students and to the new entrepreneurs, maybe even some people that are trying to open their own pharmacies and things like that, find a way to get away from the hourly and start kind of serving people in a way that you're like, okay, well, how many people can I serve by doing this? And that's what I did with the audio is now, you know, I teach, if you want to think of it that way, I teach 800 people that bought the book each month versus teaching 24 in a classroom. So it's a completely different sized audience. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I was thinking about, they were talking about, you know, self-driving cars. And they said, they said that if right now, like if I back up right now and hit the neighbor's truck, I've learned that on a day like this with the sun shining, so, and after, you know, having a Bud Light and so on, you know, that I'm not going to tell you how many ounces, but it teaches me that. But with the self-driving cars, you know, 3 billion people are going to learn overnight what problem was solved by me figuring something out, or not me, but, you know, artificial intelligence figuring something out with the situation I was in with the light glaring so much and this and that. So, you know, it really is a numbers thing now versus an hourly. It truly is.
Yeah. But I think that unfortunately the schools of, I'm not going to say all of them, but many of the schools of pharmacy are still in this kind of, well, we're going to teach them how to be good sort of clinicians where they're doing the counseling and things like that. But honestly, I think that it's just happened that now if you're not in a residency, you're pretty much out. And if you're not entrepreneurial, you're out. I think that it has to be one of those two where you kind of go into this advanced training where you kind of learn how to learn. And then the other way, you build your own business. But that's how it was when we first started. It was you either buy your own store or you go in and you still had to run the business. I always knew I'd have to be a manager. It wasn't like, okay, well, I'm just going to go, you know, do my thing, count my pills and go home. It's not, I always had to worry about shrink and all these things. So.
Yeah. In a way that was handed. Cause I remember pharmacists of my dad years ago. I mean, they would like, you know, talk to you like it was their business and they knew their job depended on it and so on. But I think that somewhere got layered in, you know, partially because of the big boy saying, look at, we know our way, don't bother with it. And so there, I think that divide was there, but you're right. That's how it always was before.
Yeah. So I think we're coming back to it. I think it's, hey, you know, you're going to be in a business one way or the other, or you're going to care about the bottom line because someone above you cares about the bottom line. And it's going to be more than just, it needs to be more than just one class on, okay, well, if you were to have a community pharmacy, what would your, you know, operating costs be? What would your inventory be? You know, kind of a cursory business thing. Rather, what's the business of, you know, what's the business of therapeutics? What's the business of taking care of patients? What's the business of outcomes? Those are the things I think they need to know.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Because the pharmacists who maybe have an independent class, it's like, yeah, that's a snapshot, or that's the that's an idea of what everybody has to do. And we're so used to maybe talking in these terms of how much someone should sell a piece of, you know, bazooka gum for to get the right, you know what I mean? But like that the heart of that has to really be in every class to basically, you know, solve a need.
Yeah. And that's what it is. But I think that we're definitely this year is, it's the first time the students have ever run into, I think the students for the first time ever, or certainly in recent memory, in the late 80s, which you may be old enough to remember, I am, where in the late 80s, there's actually an oversupply of physicians. And that is just insane to think about with the primary care shortage we have right now.
Yeah, right.
And right now the data show, but this is only coming from five schools, that the unemployment rate at graduation is around 33% on average for the students, which is absolutely terrifying, I'm sure, to some of them.
Wow.
And it's going to be, I think it's only going to get worse right now. And something will happen, I think, that'll help them in terms of, you know, kind of figuring out, okay, well, I've got this problem. What do I do? And I think instead of those two options, hospital or retail, they'll kind of be given this kind of pass, like, all right, well, your opportunity in this way to just get started and get on your feet and get the golden handcuffs on isn't there. So you have a kind of an entrepreneurial opportunity that's kind of been thrown at you. And now you've kind of got to make your way. And I think that group is actually going to come out better in many ways than the group that had, okay, well, thank goodness I got a job at this one, even though I'm a floater and driving an hour or 2 hours to a job, at least I have this job, or I got the residency I wanted. And now, you know, I've got this path. But that third, I think, is going to be the most innovative, or certainly the most innovations are going to come from that group, because they were given no options. And just like somebody coming, you know, from another country, my dad's an immigrant, they weren't given the traditional options of here's this job or that. They've got, okay, well, what can I do and how can I make it in this environment? And I think they're going to get it. So I don't think it's a good thing, but I think it's going to be innovative. I think,
well, so many people, including myself, you know, you kind of had the golden handcuffs on you. You said, and my school, that wasn't even that much when I'm talking the early 90s compared to the
60 grand, 55 grand.
Yeah. And, but you get the golden handcuffs saying, well, how dare I, you know, think of doing this when this is what I'm, you know, I'm kind of like supposed to be doing this and so on. And you're right with those first and second choices, maybe not as strong as before, that third one is, it could be a mandate, but also like a kind of an invitation to that, saying like, you know, you should do this almost.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, you know, okay, well, your option is to be a floater at 32 hours. Maybe you'll get your hours. Maybe you won't. Or to say, okay, well, and I hate to use a business term, sunk cost, with something like this, but it is a sunk cost. You've spent the money, you've gotten the degree. Now, what do you do with it? It's just like somebody going, all right, well, I got a bachelor's degree. I'm not going to go back and undo 2 years of school, because it would have been more efficient to just do 2 years of school beforehand. So if you think of it as a sunk cost, you're like, all right, I did that. This is the skill set I got. What am I going to do now? And I think that once they get to that point, then there's a lot of innovation, but I think there's a lot of opportunity to support them. So I think podcasts like yours are going to be the things that they're turning to and like, all right, well, what did other people that are in my situation do? And that's when I think the solution comes, is as they start to see, okay, well, this other person graduated from Ferris State, or this other person graduated from Michigan, and this is what they did. And I think that's exactly where the answers are. So,
and truthfully, now that as we know that, I keep telling my kids this, and this is not a new thought for me, but I keep instilling them. It's like, you guys, this is the best time to be alive, because one, you don't have any middlemen. You don't have any, you know, any guys from the producers of the shows or the magazine articles that you have to fight to get through. You know, you can do this finally on your own. You have to be good enough, but you can do it on your own. And, you know, the price of just doing anything has come down, in the size and the space. I was just talking to my wife earlier about moving someday. And I'm like, Margaret, look at that whole wall of, you know, that whole wall of books and equipment and TV. And I said, that's in our hand right now. You know, we can go down to a nice back porch and a kitchen and we'd be all set.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
Well, Tony, listen, I love talking to you, but with this, I'm afraid that there's going to be some wise words that come out of your mouth. I know they are going to, and my setup here is going to drop you and lose them. So I want to, I unfortunately want to end now, but I hope I can get the promise out of you that once I get set up again and I stop dropping you on these calls, that we chat again.
No, definitely. I want to definitely keep up, and I do listen to your podcast and keep up with what you're doing. And I think it's so important that more will do what you do, because there are a lot of people that need answers right now. And what we really need is good business mentors. And hopefully you'll be that to a number of students.
Yeah, and I will, and likely to you too, because or the same to you too. And I know that you even went so far on your leaders podcast, if I have it right, that you adjusted the name a bit just to really focus in on what the need was now, right?
Yeah, it's kind of the nice thing. Just like you said, you know, I don't have to ask the producer of Survivor, hey, you know, yeah. I think this year they're going to really, residency is the best bet because it's a 50-50 shot and we're getting 80 applications for each retail position. Yes. So let's help those guys and let's kind of talk about maybe they need to up the number of students that they're allowed to have with each residency director, because right now it's looking a bit glum for the graduates of this year, and hopefully we can give the guys next year a heads up. So at least they know, hey, a third of our class or more is not going to have employment at graduation. Let me make sure that I prepare for that time rather than getting there in March. Like I didn't match and now what? And they yeah. really don't have a plan. So I think planning for that, planning for the worst, expecting the best, planning for the worst, whatever that saying is, I think that's what we can hopefully help them do.
Yeah. And I love, I mean, selfishly as a business owner and with my team, of course, my customers, but looking at my team, those are the people on my payroll. That's who I focus on. Is I'm always looking at trends. You know, we've been in the business for a number of years and hopefully a number more, but I loved, and in fact, I had just listened to your episode 233 before we got on the line here. And, talks a lot about what happened at, you know, Walmart and the incomes of pharmacists and things like that. And I love that, you know, you had said, well, we don't know what's happening because we only have like the 2000, you know, the figures from last year and, you know, figures in my head go back, like, you know, things that are current for me are like 20 years ago. That's more current than 30 years ago, but it's fascinating to me. The pivot that you're doing with your ear to the ground for these students. And I think that is wonderful. And I just encourage everybody to follow you closely, because you're, you know, maybe none of us have the answers, but we at least might have the right questions that, you know, you're asking.
Yeah. Together we can put together our own little Pharmacy X or SpaceX or whatever it is.
Yes, definitely. Well, Tony, you are a lot of fun to talk to, and I want to get on hold. I want to get on with you again, but let's make sure that I at least have some audio from our connection here. And then we'll plan to talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tony. Bye-bye.
All right, see you. Bye-bye.
This was the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for future episodes.